everyone, you are listening to part one of our mosquito episode because it was so awesome that we had to break it up into two episodes. But don't worry, you don't have to wait till next month. You can listen to part two as soon as you're done with this episode. Enjoy!
Welcome to Naturally Florida, a podcast about Florida's natural areas and the wild things that live here. I'm Lara Milligan.
And I'm Shannon Carnevale.
This podcast is brought to you by UF IFAS Extension in Polk and Pinellas counties.
Lara, I don't know if you've noticed, but we did a night hike the other night and the mosquitoes, well, it's that season when they're coming back. I know it's only March, but the rain has started. Temperatures seem to be warmer. And for at least half an hour there, we had a lot of mosquitoes, sadly.
Yeah, we have experienced something similar at my children's daycare, and I was not ready. I was just not ready for mosquitoes in March, but they were insane. Like,
yeah,
I mean, literally a wall of mosquitoes when you open the door.
Oh, gosh, when you can hear that sound and you know, like, oh, okay, close my mouth, try to breathe through my nose. We got to make a run for it.
Nose right now? No.
Lara's sick, so hopefully you guys can't hear that, but she's toughing it out today. But we should probably start this episode the same way we start a lot of our episodes about common species that we're trying to learn more about. Why don't we start a little bit on what are mosquitoes? What makes them different from other insects that kind of act like mosquitoes? You know, I'm thinking blind mosquitoes and midges. Like, what makes a mosquito, Lara?
Okay, yes. So as Shannon mentioned, the mosquitoes are insects. So we'll kind of start there. And if you remember, that's six legs with the three main body parts. And they are considered true flies. So that means they have two forewings and hind wings, which the hind wings are very reduced in a mosquito, but they are there. If you want to put one under a microscope to know that I'm telling you the truth. In terms of kind of what makes a mosquito, though, they're in the family Callicidae. And so that's true flies. They have piercing and sucking proboscis, which perhaps you're more familiar with that word as in association with butterflies. But that is the part that we do not love.
Yeah, just their mouth part, that straw.
That sucks our blood. but not all species, and we'll talk about that. And then kind of the key feature is that they have this humpback-shaped thorax. And if you think about a mosquito, it's, again, probably not something you think about too much, but they do have that humpback shape, and that is a key characteristic that makes a mosquito a mosquito. Now, in Florida, there's 12 genera of mosquitoes that together, and when we talk about the species, we're talking approximately 90 species of mosquitoes in Florida.
That's just too many. It's just too much. When we joke about how many mosquitoes are in Florida, I don't even think about the species, but like 90. Jeez.
Yeah, I have no words, obviously.
Now, just because we have 90 species in Florida doesn't mean we have 90 species everywhere we live, right? So there are going to be species of mosquitoes that are only found near saltwater. There's going to be species that don't tolerate the cold well. There's going to be some species that prefer North Florida versus South Florida and coastal Florida versus inland Florida. Just like all of our other species, mosquitoes have habitat preferences.
Yeah, so there's kind of broad categories that we can put mosquitoes in to help us think about these 90 different species that we have. So there's floodwater mosquitoes, standing water mosquitoes, and container mosquitoes. When it comes to the floodwater mosquitoes, the way that they lay their eggs and the eggs hatch is very different from the other species. So they will actually use moist soil. I know I said the M word, and I'm sorry for those that don't like that. But they'll lay their eggs in moist soil, and the eggs actually have to dry out before they can hatch. Like, they won't hatch until they dry out. And so in terms of where this might be, we can think of pastures, which cover a large portion of our state, citrus areas, salt marsh areas, even swales. So once eggs are laid in this area, they'll dry out in the winter, spring time. And then once they're inundated with water, whether that's from a regular rain, a storm that comes through, that basically triggers those eggs to hatch. And then they come out by, I mean, literally in some areas by the millions. It's like your world's worst nightmare.
Yeah. So those are probably the ones that we're seeing because it's now March and the rain has started.
Yes. And it'll be a combination of the two, the other group that we're going to talk about in a minute. But with floodwater mosquitoes, so one female can lay up to 200 eggs per batch. And there was one paper that I was reading that estimated there were anywhere from 0.7 to 1.3 million eggs per acre in floodwater habitat.
That is an unfathomable. I can't even say that word. Unfathomable amount of eggs. I mean, and if I imagine everyone listening probably isn't used to working in acres.
Right. So,
you know, if you think about Florida, I don't know how many acres Florida is, but I can tell you that the property that we did the DeLuca BioBlitz on a couple weeks ago, that was one single property that was 30,000 acres. And a lot of it is old pasture and old field. That would be prime habitat for floodwater mosquitoes.
So maybe don't do a BioBlitz in the summer. I don't know what you're saying.
Well, that's why we do it in spring. It's still dry. But I would say floodwater mosquitoes are also common in my backyard. Like my yard gets real, like once it starts raining, there are some areas where I could have standing water, but it dries out really, really well during the dry season.
Yeah. So the floodwater mosquitoes might be the ones that we're starting to see, like Shannon said, after we get our first rain and things like that. Now, probably what most of us are thinking about when we think about mosquitoes are these more the permanent water mosquitoes. And so that's when they're laying their eggs on standing water. It can't just be moist soil. There actually has to be a body of water. And so, and the eggs cannot withstand drying out. Very different from the species, the group that we talked about before. So, and those eggs will hatch typically within 24 hours. So again, very different from the floodwater mosquitoes. One thing that we like to point out, especially in Florida, is if we think about, you know, think like hurricane season or after a drought, and we have not only a trigger for these floodwater mosquitoes, but we also have an increased and enhanced habitat for these kind of permanent water or standing water mosquitoes, we now have habitat for both. And so both can emerge basically at the same time. And it just becomes, so if you're ever like, what? So if you're ever like, why are mosquitoes so bad after, you know, a storm or after a drought? That's why, because both of these groups or types of mosquitoes are emerging at the same time.
The perfect storm.
Yes. And then we have this other category of mosquitoes that are often referred to as like container mosquitoes. So that can be ones that breed in kind of these more temporary bodies of water, if you even want to call it a body of water. Pockets of water would be a better way to say that. So that could be like something like a bottle cap, tires. So the kind of the inside of the tire can collect water. Any buckets that we leave out. I mean, if you have children, think about any toy that you could leave outside that can hold a tiny amount of water. And that can kind of meet the criteria for these container mosquitoes to breed. And this can also be natural kind of holes or places that would hold water. So think like tree holes, bromeliads. That's a huge one. You probably have heard of that as it relates to mosquito breeding habitat with the bromeliads kind of holding those little pockets of water. So those are the three main categories. So we have floodwater, very different, you know, need to dry out, the kind of more permanent water that cannot dry out and hatch within 24 hours, have to be laid on a surface of water. And then those container mosquitoes that can kind of lay in these more temporary, smaller areas that are holding water.
Yeah. And all this talk about where they reproduce makes me think that maybe we should slow down for a second and talk about the life cycle of mosquitoes. Because if we don't understand how mosquitoes come to be and how they get to that point, that adult that we all love to hate, it's hard to really plan how we want to manage them, right? So Lara was talking about where they lay their eggs. And it's important to know that after they become eggs, they hatch and become larvae. At that larva stage, they live in that water that their eggs were hatched in or near. And so this stage when we get to management later in the episode, this stage is really important because the mosquitoes are essentially trapped wherever their eggs were laid. And we have a lot more options for management than we do once they can fly around and move. But after larva, they become a pupa, just like most insects. And then after they pupate, they become adults. And the adults are the ones that we really, really, with a fiery passion, dislike. But I do think it's important to realize that not all mosquitoes feed on human blood. Even though it feels like they do when we're out there in the middle of summer, it's some mosquitoes don't feed on humans or human blood at all. They feed on other species, such as invertebrates or frogs or toads. And then we have some groups of mosquitoes that don't even feed on blood, like at all. And those mosquitoes primarily go after nectar, which would make them pollinators, and that's really exciting. But the mosquitoes that do feed on blood, it's only about half of them. It's the female mosquitoes that are feeding on blood, and they do it for a really admirable reason if you're thinking from the perspective of a mosquito. So the female mosquitoes feed on blood only to acquire enough protein so that she can lay her eggs and allow those eggs to develop. So now that we perhaps understand a little bit more why mosquitoes are biting, I don't know that that makes me feel any better about it, but we can talk a little bit more about why that bite has the reaction it does in us. So when female mosquitoes bite humans, they put a little bit of their saliva into the area where they are feeding. That saliva contains proteins that causes a reaction in our skin. And so some people will have a more intense reaction than other people, but generally we're all going to get mosquito bites as we know them. They can become a pretty intense allergic reaction in some people, and those itchy red bumps can turn into swollen hives. And if they get really, really reactive, you could even see blisters, bruises, or large inflammatory reactions from a simple mosquito bite that might not affect other people so horribly. And if that female mosquito is harboring a pathogen, such as a virus, it is possible at that point that she will transmit it to the human that she bites through that exchange of saliva. But thankfully, not all mosquitoes bite, right, Lara?
Yes. And as Shannon alluded to, we don't need to hate all the mosquitoes. And so she just talked about the females are the ones that love to suck our blood. So there's a whole group of mosquitoes called the male mosquitoes that we can't really hate because they are not the ones that are biting us. They are only feeding on plant juices. Again, Shannon alluded to some that only feed on nectar, but when it comes to males, that is what they do. They feed on nectar to get the sugar that they need for the energy that they need in order to survive and reproduce, which is pretty much their main job. So the males do not bite, and therefore they cannot transmit diseases, which we will talk all about diseases in a little bit. So if you're wondering, what good are mosquitoes anyway? Like, just why?
Yeah, because it really doesn't sound like a win-win for us.
Yeah, not so much for us, but if you can have a heart for the greater good, they are a really important food source. We talked about how many millions of eggs could be laid per acre. So if we think about, you know, once those mosquitoes emerge, they are a very important kind of source of biomass in the whole food chain. It's food not only for fish at the larval stage, but as adults, the ones that buzz around that we don't enjoy so much, birds, bats, frogs can all feast on these adult mosquitoes. So, and again, we talked also about them, especially the males, being an important pollinator as well. So don't hate them all.
So now that we've discussed all the benefits we have for mosquitoes as far as being a prey source and being an important part of our food chain and ecosystems and biodiversity, let's get back to the elephant in the room, which is that mosquitoes can transmit diseases. So there's a stat that's thrown around about what the deadliest animals in the world are, and people tend to think of our larger predators or even humans being the most deadly animal. But when it comes down to numbers of people that are killed by an animal every year, unfortunately, it is actually the mosquito that reigns champion in that terrible competition. Thankfully, though, we can say with all of the things we're going to talk about in this section, it is not necessarily the case in the United States, though.
And the reason for this is largely in part to our mosquito control districts that we have and all the mosquito control efforts that we have in the United States, and especially here in Florida. So when it comes to mosquito control, there's several things, obviously, that mosquito control needs to think about. But one is knowing what species of mosquitoes that they have. And that's super helpful because certain species of mosquitoes carry and are vectors for various different diseases. So there's two particular species, and yes, I'm going to say the Latin names.
Do it.
That you should be familiar with because they can carry all the, like, it covers all of them. We're talking Zika, dengue, yellow fever, chikungunya.
All the bad ones.
Yeah, all the bad ones. So the two species of mosquitoes, if you don't learn any others that you should learn, are Aedes aegypti and Aedes albopictus. And that's because they can really breed just about anywhere, but it includes the containers that we talked about before. So the reason I'm saying this is because this is where you can have control over what is around your home in terms of these two species. The Aedes aegypti, these are the ones, if you have mosquitoes that are crazy aggressive, going for your ankles at dawn and dusk, you're probably looking at Aedes aegypti. And they're vectors for Zika, dengue, yellow fever, and chikungunya. Now, the Aedes albopictus is also super aggressive, but they're a daytime biter. So if you're like getting attacked during the day, very likely to be Aedes albopictus or be one of the contender species that's biting you. And they carry dengue, chikungunya, as well as heartworm. So it's really important that you help to control the breeding grounds are in and around your home. And if you're still having issues, the number one thing, if you don't take anything else away from this episode, is please work together with your mosquito control district. Their only job literally is to help reduce mosquito populations that are potentially causing harm to public health through the transmission of these diseases. So reach out to them, say, hey, I'm still having issues. I've dumped all my containers. I've done all the things, and they can come out and help you. So please, please, please take advantage of them.
And I'd just like to add, because I think it's important for our podcast, I just wanted to give a little bit more information on the actual species, Aedes aegypti and Aedes albopictus. And the reason that we call them by their full scientific name, as much as we struggle to pronounce it at times, is because that is the best name to make sure that you're talking about the right species if you're talking to mosquito control or if you're looking information up online. But they do have some common names. And I think the common name for Aedes aegypti is really telling. Its common name is yellow fever or dengue mosquito because it's known for spreading those two diseases. So that's important to know. Neither species, Aedes aegypti or Aedes albopictus, are native to the state of Florida. These invasive species are found throughout the state. Aedes aegypti is found throughout the state except parts of the panhandle. It's highly adapted to urban and suburban environments, which gets back to that part where Lara was mentioning how much control we have over our own yards and parks if we work with our municipalities on reducing the amount of Aedes aegypti in our neighborhoods. And this species is regarded as the most important vector species, again, of dengue, chikungunya, and Zika, both in Florida and worldwide. So they are not just the most important species for those here, but they are the most important species for that worldwide. Aedes albopictus is also an invasive species. It was established in Texas in the 1980s before it started coming into Florida from the north and going southward throughout the peninsula. This species did competitively displace Aedes aegypti from some parts, so you can find them both in the same areas. They are both highly adapted to urban and suburban environments. And this one's common name is the Asian tiger mosquito, because it is very obvious its little stripes it has on some of its legs. They look like little stripes. So just wanted to give you a little bit more information on both of these species because they are so important to mosquito control, which I think is a great way, Lara, for us to transition to how our communities are dealing with these two species.
Yeah, for sure. And we talked about mosquito control districts, which you can look online and find your local mosquito control district. But in terms of the efforts that they undertake, they do something called integrated mosquito management, often more commonly known as integrated pest management, but obviously specific to mosquitoes. And the key thing when it comes to that, which I've alluded to before, is simply knowing what species you have. Because again, we know what species can vector what diseases. So the way that this is done is first and foremost is by setting traps. And traps are actually set year round to kind of just monitor and see quantities of mosquitoes and species of mosquitoes that they are collecting. Typically, more traps will be set during the rainy season, which is the same, ironically, as mosquito season, which is May to October. So that's why we're setting you up early with this episode to prepare you. It's coming.
Hey, everyone. As I said at the beginning of the episode, we did have to break this episode up into two, but you can listen to part two right now. Go ahead and click next episode on your podcast player, and you can listen to part two of our mosquito episode now. Thanks for listening to Naturally Florida, a podcast about Florida's natural areas and the wild things that live here. Stay updated on new episodes by subscribing on your favorite podcast platform. If you enjoyed today's episode, consider sharing it with a friend. Naturally Florida is produced by your hosts, Shannon Carnavalli
and Lara Milligan.
If you have questions or suggestions, submit them online at naturallyfloridapodcast.com. This podcast is brought to you by the University of Florida's Institute of Food and Agricultural Sciences Extension, an equal opportunity institution. Thank you for listening.